The Presentation Podcast, Season 7, Episode 196. Let's join Troy, Nolan, and Sandy as they have a conversation with Release 8 from Microsoft about AI, Copilot, and storytelling.
I'm Troy Collar from Southern California, and...
Good start.
I am Troy Collar, TLC Creative Services, based in Southern California.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in Montclair, New Jersey, where it seems like it's spring finally.
Today we have an amazing guest that, well, we all met and got to know as the title of Senior Product Manager at Microsoft for PowerPoint. Not there anymore. Not going to give away any hints, but it's really amazing. But if you look at her resume, or you happen to know this person, then you know that she is she's not content staying in one place for long, is kind of our takeaway. Now, she is still with Microsoft, but is the principal product manager for Gen AI. Obviously, the whole world is about generative AI, and this person is there. She's working on products such as, Designer, Copilot, and really kind of a thought leader, all around brilliant thinker when it comes to the intersection of technology and creativity, which I like to think that we do as presentation designers. So everybody, we're going to welcome Raleigh. Hold on. Got to do it exactly right here. Just like her mother would say, Raleigh Sait to the show. It is always nice to have someone from Microsoft on the podcast, and always nice to have someone, well, kind of has a pulse on the rapidly changing technologies that we're all dealing with right now. One of the themes of this podcast, it wasn't planned, it's just kind of evolved, is that it always seems that nobody in our industry ever takes a direct path to it. I think that would include most of the program product managers at Microsoft that deal with PowerPoint and now AI, because AI didn't exist when everybody was doing their career steps. So let's start things by allowing you to introduce yourself to the listeners, tell us what your path was to where you are today, and also kind of summary of what that current role at Microsoft is.
Cool. Thank you guys for welcoming me. It is an honor to join you guys. And in terms of your introduction, one thing I would say is, although you might see my title changing, but my core is still the same, and it's about storytelling. And that's where we connect, be it our PowerPoint, be it designer, or other products that I'll work in the future. So I think I'm very passionate to come here. In terms of my path, I define the path word as parallel tracks of alternate timeline horizons, meaning what I wanted to do versus what I got to do. In terms of like a quick snippet of what I started doing was, I wanted to do a PhD in astronomy and astrophysics.
Woo!
Started there as a researcher, then joined as a scientist fellow, again trying to pursue that path in Government of India, Ministry of Science and Technology. There was a department there in India. Did a lot of research, but also a lot of multidisciplinary things. That's where, as an engineering background, then I joined this liberal arts education program. So another twist that again broadened my horizon further into all different disciplines, be it psychology, philosophy, anthropology, and combining with my tech background, I joined Microsoft in 2012. Because of one of the innovation me and my team of other two folks have done using Microsoft Connect technology that time. And the point when we joined was, how do we bring multidisciplinary tech and innovation in Microsoft? That was my starting point. Since then, I have worked on multiple entrepreneurial roles in Microsoft. So I usually joke, like, I get to have fun, enjoy, and always work on the cutting and get salaried for it too. And I joined Cut2. 2020, I joined the office product group working on the latest innovations in video and camera across Teams and Word and PowerPoint and other products. And as of last year, I've been exploring a lot into the generative AI. And my current role is about, how do you bring visual AI storytelling? And that's what Microsoft Designer Product is about, visual AI creation across different tools and adopting this generative AI first approach in product building.
Cool. And so you started with Microsoft in India and then moved over to Redmond. Can you, and while you were on the PowerPoint team, can you mention any of the features you worked on specifically?
Yeah, one of my like baby features is PowerPoint Cameo.
Okay, so cool.
Every day whenever I see someone join, I'm like, can I use PowerPoint? And my like face gets spread. Yeah, so Cameo was one of the baby products in terms of not just for the latest generation of storytelling, but also taught me a lot about diversity and inclusion. A lot of neuroscience folk like reached out to me. It's like, hey, you're just integrating camera, but you know the diversity spectrum that we don't like things moving a lot. And I'm all about like moving and animation. So in that terms, like PowerPoint product has a deep feeling in my heart with Cameo. And so folks, if anyone is listening and you have not tried PowerPoint Cameo, please go and
we love it. And thank you for all your work on that. Yes.
I ask the question that way because obviously anytime we talk with people at Microsoft, we know there's some things you can't talk about and some things you can, but actually you've been very public about Cameo. So another thing you were very public about, you just spoke at at a conference at MIT Sloan on AI, which I watched, and you mentioned that you actually studied the world of magic to better understand AI, and you actually reached out and spoke with magicians. And I know this is true because I was one of those people that you reached out to at one point because you learned I have a background in magic, and I do. And you told me, and this was just a fascinating conversation, you said you were getting tired of sitting in meeting after meeting about AI in which the word magic was just sort of being tossed around casually, right? And you said, okay, guys, if we're going to keep using this word, I want to know more about the world of magic and how it might actually relate to or inform AI and these current technologies. All right. So we talked and I sent you some books and resources and you studied up and I believe you wrote a paper about it. I read it, but what did you discover about magic and AI? I mean, really, any connection? Or are people just throwing the word around?
I would first say thank you, Nolan, for taking out the time and all the pointers you gave. I studied books on magic. I took master classes on magic. And the good news, like in terms of where this connects is, I found it's common terminologies with storytelling and presentations is same. And where some of the terminologies were common is about, it kept pointing to words like psychology, perception, which is very good when people are defining, but they are even misdirection. Like that keyword you gave me, there's so much deep meaning in terms of misdirection of how tech misdirection happened and how you can, like, so magic is all about the conflict between what user believe they are seeing versus what is going on in their mind. So it's like same as storytelling. So I can talk in length beyond that paper for hours, but I think the main key points was three P's of personality, psychology, and perception. How do you connect them? And I've seen less people thinking about psychology and perception and more of just the visual aspects of it.
Could you just give one example of how that sort of, I guess, that AI interface with a user or AI performing for a user, how, you know, a decision has been made or a UI has been constructed or, you know, anything to sort of, yeah, I think, you know.
So two examples, even when you use Midjourney as an example, when you start typing, it says imagine. It starts with the word / imagine. That automatically, without telling you anything, it takes you to some story wonderland of started to already start believing into what might not be possible. So even if it doesn't give you the right answer, it's like, no, magic created it. Or other tiny one, which is like you guys are into PowerPoint, so all icons. With generative AI, the most popular icon, if you have to blindly your eyes and think, what is the first thing, it's like that sparkly dust, like that sparkle thing of icon. Have you ever, like in the chatbot, the end is that sparkle. People don't.
The little stars go like that. Yeah.
It's like, no one, like, I don't know how, I was trying to figure it out who first coined that sparkle to be used with generative AI. Everywhere where that search button is, it's converted to that sparkle. So while people don't know, these things are like starting to get integrated in generative AI, which is tiny, but people have started perceiving it differently.
So as somebody who works with Disney a lot, that is pixie dust, just for reference. Yes. Those are not sparkles. Every time I see it, I'm like, oh, pixie dust.
Magic.
We do pixie dust in a lot of presentation work. And we have a whole library of pixie dust images. But that's pretty funny. That's every time I think of, like, oh, generative AI, Tinkerbell pixie dust.
Exactly.
Okay, side note.
A magic wand has the those little stars at the end of it. Excellent. Excellent.
I love that you pointed out they use the word imagine, because I can hear in my brain, literally magicians starting a routine or starting a show. Imagine, because it does. It like opens you up for anything is possible, or what you think, what you would normally do. We're going to go beyond that, or that's not it. That's not the thing that you think. We're going to open you up to something new, you know, something you never even thought of before, or didn't have permission to think of, which is cool.
Hey, Nolan, when you're reading that paper, were you looking for your credit in it that Rolly wrote?
Real reason you get a credit at the end.
I'm sure you did.
Rolly likes to eat that.
I reached out to say, hey, if he wants to write a book with, because I'm so passionate. Oh,
there you go.
Beyond a paper. So Nolan someday will write.
Yeah, a big seller. Okay. I can see this on the, not in the little niche category of best sellers, but a big seller. That's really cool. So let's move from magic to something a little bit more tactical. Rolly, can you explain a little bit about user-facing AI ecosystem at Microsoft? And before I let you answer that, I'm so sorry. I want to caution us about getting too deep into the background, or into the back end, excuse me. You have PowerPoint Designer, which we now call we refer to as the original AI. And we think that led to Just Designer and then kind of back into Copilot and then Copilot for M365. Where do you sit among all these? You know, how do they work together and what should we know about them and each of their focuses? That was very convoluted.
Well, you can only use the word designer like 9 times in a row.
I know it.
Yeah, Raleigh's been a part of the whole process, I believe.
It's all about story. So I would say it's all connected together. So while current, it's like baby steps. Because you guys have been there since the starting, you know how it evolved. But where the future is, or if you have been reading Satya's post about Copilot in general, it's all like one Microsoft Copilot branding. It's not multiple AIs in the company. There's one generative AI ecosystem, which is Copilot. And how, Sandy, your question about like within PowerPoint, is it copilot.microsoft.com? It should gradually flow. The main core is about you have an intent of something, be it like story creation. You could start on Copilot site. So that's where Designer currently, a lot of focus is about that you're not there in any app. How your intent is app agnostic. You start anywhere, and as you flow, now it's like, hey, I started with the first draft, and now I want to edit more. Then you move on to an app, and that's where the other Copilot, PowerPoint Copilot, and deep details is. So I would say it's all joined together and connected. You might not see that seamless currently.
Yes.
Where we are working towards, and hopefully in near
you were reading my mind. I was going, well, maybe that's a future. Future.
So, but that's where in terms of the first step was about branding and people making aware. Earlier it was different app Copilots. Now it's just Microsoft Copilot. It has one starting entry point, which is either the Copilot app and Copilot's website. But if you're already not at the starting point, because several people don't know which apps to use. One of the struggles of, not the struggles, but learning of M365 is there's so many apps. You guys are heavy into PowerPoint, but I see as part of even last week's PowerPoint MVP Summit, now there are MVP specialists just for M365 in general, because not many people know that there is apps beyond Word, PowerPoint, Excel that people can use. So where does it sit as I would say, we are working towards making the designer or PowerPoint just more one seamless canvas that no matter which app you use, you will be able to leverage the other capability.
How often have you seen somebody draw on a whiteboard at Microsoft the org chart of where everything is going?
Currently, it's all boards.
Maybe you don't have these questions that we do, because I imagine people constantly drawing on the whiteboard. Okay, it's this, but these are together, and this is what the user is going to see, and this is their entry point, and all that. Because it is, it's been a confusing rollout, and it's still rolling out, I guess.
And so I'm giving a talk, another talk this week internally around uncertainty. It's like, this will stay with generative AI. This might maybe more increase. But in terms of the, I see it very positively that several orgs are excited. So they parallelly start working on it. And once they evolve, then that's like the storming forming phase that now it's like, hey, there is a similarity that we can start flowing together on different paths. So, So yeah, there is discussions, and but we don't stop at the initial phase of this. Like, hey, don't do anything until someone tells. Different teams, different apps are so excited about generative AI that they start evolving. So yes, there have been discussions internally of like, how do we seamlessly flow between apps, be it in Microsoft or even, I think it's not just M365 at this level with generative AI, it's at Microsoft level. If you're using photos, if you're using other apps or Clipchamp or other products, it's not
or Bing, maybe.
It's like, yeah, Bing research. Has a seamless flow. It's like, how do we take you from there to PowerPoint, to other apps? And so you'll see more in the future.
Okay, yeah. Well, that is an awesome story in the fact that all of Microsoft is kind of in sync or on board and moving forward. So, okay, keeping with the story theme, though, from what you have seen, how are like presentation designers and PowerPoint users, the people listening, making the most use out of, I'll just say, Copilot and AI tools in general, whether they be Microsoft or not? Kind of like, what are they leaving on the table? Like, because you're really entrenched in generative AI tools. Like, what aren't people just taking advantage of, or what could or should they be for presentation design?
Yeah, even I would say starting with the title. The MIT talk that I gave, I literally asked ChatGPT what should the title of my story and the track should be. Because not that it does just spin it out, but give some context. And that itself opens my mind into so much. So my MIT talk was about, the title said co-creating creative pixels. That came out of the Copilot itself.
But, really?
Yeah, so I'm saying, I just give the talk track and it gives my creativity. So not that I need to define my entire story or presentation based on that, but it triggers that creative, magical thought of like, wow, I've not thought creative pixel as the work that I do or the Pixie does. So that was me one starting. The other one is around custom GPTs are getting very popular. I don't know if you guys have made, but for presentation or stories, they are starting to trend more in general, not specific to a presentation app, but how do people create creative stories? So that's another one that Copilot has Copilot Studio, but in general, GPTs are popular. So if that would be another interesting one I'm seeing, that people want to modify their story, but give a character or a personality for their presentation, but also talk through, because people want with GPTs and Copilots to be more interactive stories. So that's another storytelling way, that your story is a canvas where you show slides, etc. But how do you make it interactive by using something like a custom GPT? So I see people started to do that, and I'm guessing there'll be more of custom GPTs.
Okay.
Before we go any further, you mentioned what I think is one of the coolest things out there. I think there's pathways for this into presentation storytelling for certain, maybe in that. And it's the Copilot Studio. I just recently, I spent like a half a day just diving into everything I could find online. I just went down the rabbit hole. I think it's pretty cool. Now my summary is, Copilot Studio is kind of where, assume you have a Copilot account, and that gets confusing because there's different levels of accounts. But anyways, you can dive in and say, here is what I am working on. And it's a conversational back and forth, and it's kind of like this whole process for creating everything you're working on, whether it be code, images, presentation. I mean, how do you describe Copilot Studio? I think it's really, really an amazing up-and-coming tool.
Yeah, it's basically, I see, because I'm thinking from the storytelling perspective of, I'm personalizing it to with my personality or some personality, even connecting to the magic that I want it to mimic, so that it gives answer from that behavior or personality changes. So how should it feel? How should it react? All these tiny things. So Copilot Studio is basically a way for you to create personalized personality creations.
Yeah, I think it's going to be huge.
I'm
admit I'm a little bit confused. You talked about the custom GPTs. So can you tell us a story about how someone might create and or use a custom GPT?
Yeah. So it could be, I know one of the popular GPTs in public is about, say, coloring book. That's like, and in PowerPoint, like a lot of templates, if you would have seen, like parents are interested in color. It's slightly tangential, not like the typical enterprise example, but where coloring book is all about visual creation, but there is an intent of an age group. So user need is, there's a five-year-old kid. I just learned recently only as I was.
Or maybe there are twin six-year-old girls for somebody that uses PowerPoint to create yes. coloring books for his girls when they go out to sushi dinner with friends.
Yeah. And it's very different, like based on the personality group. It's not a static coloring book template that you release into the market. If it's five-year-old versus six-year-old, I recently, like the boxes have to be bigger, outlined have to be more bigger. Mm-hmm. But if it's 7 years old, they can have with the tiny boxes and try to go into the circle. Numbering comes into play and digit comes into play. So I would say you might think of coloring book as just one thing, but there are so many aspects of coloring book that when you give the prompt, it has to understand and personalize. So that's where you give more additional details to GPT that when someone is asking you to create a coloring book presentation or like deck
yes.
template, think of the context. If they're telling you age group, adapt it to wider boxes, adapt it to wider number, maybe smaller colors, like red, blue, green, versus if it's a slightly older kid, maybe give a range of shades to choose from. So it gives more, it's the word is called meta prompt. Then yep. you feed in additional information of what personality is.
Got it. That so helps a lot.
It's like a profile in a way of, so I, and you can now create them. You can create them in Microsoft Copilot, right? The custom yep. GPTs. So you can have these mm-hmm. multiple profiles or GPTs, as you just explained, one for the kids, one for me, one for business, one for that will...
An example, just to relate like how this is trending, and if you search on what are the popular AI, character AI itself, avatar AI is all like trending fields in itself across the industry.
Say that again, which one?
Character AI. So character? You believe character, yeah, character AI. It's a company.
Character.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, what are they doing specifically?
Basically, it's all about personality creation. Think of Duolingo AI, another one that... Because you guys are into presentation storytelling, read there are a lot of cool videos on Duolingo AI. They have created fun caricatures of their AI personality. So if you have to learn Japanese, they have like a literally sushi lover AI that you can talk to, and they're really like,
I love it.
So it's like, I love how Duolingo adopted the AI with a fun twist in terms of visual creation. So.
Okay, I am on character AI, and it's pretty cool. It's still in beta mode, but I love it.
I have to say, I've been using Duolingo to learn some Italian, and I let it drop for a while, and I got an email from them saying, "You're a failure." And I had never gotten anything from a company like that, but I was like, okay. Like it prompted me to get back on. I was like, all right, I guess that was a fact.
You called me on that. Okay, that's great.
I mean, it started simple. It's like, hey, I haven't seen you, like, where you been? And then it's like you're
the direct approach. Yeah. You need a Has anybody ever like searched? This is a great, so Raleigh, you just sprung it. Has anybody looked into like ChatGPT Bob Ross, you know, painter Bob Ross? Mm-hmm. There are some awesome people out there that have like made not personas, I'd love to see that, but had ChatGPT recreate or, you know, give an instructional how-to based on a Bob Ross type of painting. That's kind of a big thing around here for us. Okay, mm-hmm. Raleigh, just to get us back on track. You mentioned this earlier, and it's the concept of iterative creation of the story, you know, modifying the story. As example, you said the talk title, or maybe it could be the slide title for each, you know, each, not each and every slide, but the slide you're working on. I personally am looking forward to Copilot becoming a better tool for modifying select content versus just creating content. Do you see that as the future for storytelling?
Yes. So that's where I'm spending my time. And that was another piece of my MIT storytelling briefly. It's like, while people are thinking about creator economy, I am exploring remix economy. And by remix economy, it means, again, all public info. If you go and search some of the latest trends in AI, there's another one where, how do I create something similar like this? Like, I upload an image and I want to create, use it as a template. Or with PowerPoint, I know 90% of the time, people want to start presentation by using something else. So it's like, in general, about stories that I have some things in mind, but I don't know. I just know that maybe I've created. So yeah, editor economy or remix economy. And to give an example with Microsoft Designer, I don't know if you have guys recently used on copilot.microsoft.com, but when you go and create an image, you get an editor option within Copilot's website itself.
Okay.
It doesn't have a lot of options at the moment, but it gives you that mimic of the feel that now you can do much more than creation. It's about, you can now adapt what you created. You can play around with it. You can modify.
Where I'm looking is I have my slide deck. I want to modify this one, or I pulled in this slide from Bob, you know, because it was his and I need to kind of make it my own and I need to, you know, change the image and, you know, to something. And I'm looking for that granular. I love this editor economy. I want to be the editor of my slide, but this is the only portion of it I need to remix or edit. And I'm just looking for Copilot to evolve into that. Now, I realize this thing's been around for like basically less than a year. So as far as an entire thought philosophy, and I'm just, you know, it's moving forward. I'm very excited about it.
And I think I want to, again, connect back to Nolan's like magic. I want to do this a magical podcast. So one of the other things I had talked at the MIT was around this axis of human and human known, human unknown, and AI known versus AI unknown. So think of this. And in terms of the story where I'm trying to do this remix or editing exploration is what by itself, none of the pieces that human or AI could solve. But when you create that magical combination of AI and human working together, you can unblock this remix mystery. So,
you know, Julie Terberg said something on our last podcast about if you have to, if what you're trying to accomplish.
I'm going to interject with a quick correction. Sandy is referring to something that Echo Swinford said during a recent podcast.
But they were concerned immediately after Copilot was released. And I'm like, look, Copilot will automate a lot of things, but it is not going to automate the stuff that you guys are doing. And I feel like if a large part of your job is that you get paid to think for a living, then you probably don't have a whole lot to worry about. At least
that's
not
a great statement.
That's a very good Echo.
I'm quoting Echo.
Thought process. You will not be replaced by AI. And I think you nailed it in that you, there's that combination of human and AI thought or processing that is necessary to remix.
Double nailed it because it became a magical combination.
magical combination. Exactly. I like that. And I love the term remix economy. I think that's really great.
And is the hope that all of these, you know, remix and editor and like all these different, you know, abilities for, you know, Copilot that it has will make their way into Office from within Office, that you won't have to go to separate channels or places to make the image, to edit the image, to, you know, set up your custom GPT or whatever. Like, it'll all be accessible from everywhere, including, like, let's just say from within PowerPoint, for example.
The public stated vision is there will be one Copilot. So whatever you're mentioning, the vision is around, irrespective of whichever surface you are, Copilot will adapt and personalize, but you don't have to worry. It's like, what did I do there? Like, even those things about personalization or context switching between apps and other things, which you guys are great at, but AI is not great at, will start to become more prevalent, I think, soon.
Okay.
Yeah.
We will get there. I want to ask you something that you posted, and this is definitely public, although I don't know if the full explanation is public. You hold 6 patents, I think, right? Or thereabouts. And the most recent one you received was for management of presentation content, I'm reading this, including generation and rendering of a transparent glassboard representation. And then you've got another one for an automatic 3-dimensional presentation for hybrid meetings, which sounds very futuristic, very Minority Report. just tell us what these are and tell us, like, how do you get patents as an employee of Microsoft and they let you put your name on it? Like, what are some of these more presentation related patents that you've got? What is this technology?
Yeah. So in terms of patent, I got 4 patents approved over the last year, but there are more than 6 that I filed, which you might not. But in terms of where it connects to PowerPoint and just storytelling in general, not specific to PowerPoint and AI, is it's not very futuristic. If just maybe the title of it might feel futuristic, but things like AI agents, where AI could do the work, and I started envisioning around what if I'm sleeping, because you guys as presenters and storytellers sleep and work across different time zones. So you send this draft to someone in Australia, and by the time you wake up, you have another updated. So what if AI agent while you sleep works on it? I'm saying, so it came on all the user needs that I've been seeing around, that's where like the human and AI combination of I was envisioning that AI agents are popular now in industry, maybe not at that scale, but it will become more popular. So it's, and in terms of your topic about transparent canvas, literally Cameo you can use. You can put Cameo layer on top of inking layer and put some light effects, etc., similar to light boards that are there in physical world. So some of the inspiration is about, you can use current tech, but people are not using. I'm like, why are not people just flipping the camera like for teaching scenario in PowerPoint slide and putting an inking layer? And you can literally do a tutorial on that. And so,
great idea.
It's not that futuristic while people, yeah. So most of the, and another one was about transparent. It was more about, I see people creating in general, like presentation or stories with Vision Pro and all the AR, VR world. And then there are 2D screen presentation creators. So this was more about, how can you use the same canvas you create once, but you can see this say, as soon as you switch to a 3D or AI, MR, holographic canvas, it becomes transparent automatically. So there's not very deep futuristic things. Idea is cool, but tech exists. Like, what if your background becomes transparent? All you require in your color shades will become more holographic. That's all you need when you're translating for a 2D screen to go into your Vision Pro or something.
I can totally see Rolly talking to Copilot. Okay, I have this idea. It's really, really simple. I just want to add another content layer. What is a better, more futuristic way? Use the word glassboard. And suddenly Nolan goes, that's amazing, high-tech, cool stuff.
Yeah. And you had another question of how do we go about patents. So not many people know, but in the company, I'm the patent lead of the team also. But also it's very easy process. It's just that people usually don't. We have an internal URL where if you have an internal idea, you just submit it and lawyers will evaluate and define the thing. But it's not that complicated. It's just that
sounds very easy.
People don't know. I think awareness is the issue, not creativity in the company or just.
But so, I mean, again, I'm kind of fascinated by this, but like my brother has a patent. He was a product designer in college. He worked on something, but I remember it being like a really involved long thing that was like a physical product or something. But so, I mean, in the context of working on features or something for software or for a Microsoft product, you might come up with something and think, oh, this might be patentable. And then you submit, and then it's sort of, it's owned by Microsoft and you together,
yeah.
Or?
Owned, yeah. But I think the goal is not that heavy. It's just about acknowledging the effort that someone put in thinking creatively. So like that's one of the core I've seen as part of working with the internal attorneys. It's much more creative than and fulfilling to file a patent internally.
Cool.
Although it takes time, I would agree that you mentioned.
My mind is racing with so many things. It's such an awesome conversation. Okay, we've already talked about, you know, the future, and you kind of have to, you know, when you talk, oh my gosh, how do I even want to say this? We've talked about the future, and that to talk about AI, we need to talk about trends, because you mentioned trends. What kind of AI trends with regard to storytelling and presentation are you seeing? I would love to have some like little nuggets. Like, I don't know, are these trends like in the next few months, in the next year, in the next 5 years? Like, where is storytelling and AI? What's on the horizon?
I would say, trends in general are... One of the talk was given at MIT was by Rafik Anandol, if you might know. He's like a very creative storyteller. Mm-hmm. So he started working, he has a lot of big museums, interactive installations, generative AI interactive installations in New York area and across the world. His talk was more about he's working on large nature models.
What is that?
Basically feeding all rainforest, Africa rainforest, like 8K and those resolution data kind of thing. So while it's more images of greenery and other thing. But then I started reading about and filling the dots, like large dash model. Like people are taking that large language model and adapting it to their domain of large, I don't know, nature model was there. But then there was South by Southwest conference this weekend. Last weekend, you should go and watch some of the cool videos about the trends. In terms of, I would say, overall, one of the trends is large language models are there, but small language models are also coming into the picture. Mm-hmm. So, and that's where custom GPT is part of it, but it's slightly different that you train it for your specific need, but it's for, say, mobile scenarios, more specific to some of the platforms, so device-specific AI personalization, where if you're carrying a phone versus a small tablet, how things could change. Another one that is coming big is typography, AI typography. Oh. So if you guys follow Stable Diffusion, which is like an open source AI, this week, I think 3 weeks back, they announced Stable Diffusion 3 paper, research paper, which also mentions how AI typography will become much more better.
That was my question. Why is it? I want you to finish that, but I have a question about typography. Okay.
Yeah. And this morning also, I was just, Nolan, I was testing your name on some of the generative AI image apps and type and seeing how they are good. And just like everyone's name I was testing in general, it has become much more better. Of earlier, it was just one letter it could generate with an image and did it right. Now, as of this morning, it had, you can generate words quite like 90-95 percentile with any like typography thing. I'm sure over time it would be more sentences you can generate, but yeah.
Well, I guess I'll ask, why is that such an issue? Why can't it do it?
There are a couple of thoughts there. One is when generative AI started, it could generate things which have high variance. So if you asked it to generate a forest, even if it would look like vaguely like a dotted pattern of forest, you will believe in that. Mm-hmm. But then people started saying, no, I wanted a human being with 5 fingers. Why are you showing 6 fingers? So your variance limit of what your mind thinks is true, again, talking to magic, started getting more precise. So then we started doing better humans with all the latest generative AI model. Now your variance limit with text is much more defined. If the character is not 100% perfect, you'll not be able to understand if it's which alphabet letter. So the difference is large variance versus very finished variance, which is about text. And that is taking time, but it will sure get there.
Perfect. Understood. Now, I interrupted you. Can you?
Another trend, another thing we're looking forward to.
Exactly.
In the future.
Yeah, another trend.
What is magic interaction design?
So it's about in presentation currently with magic, there are three principles of it. How do you trick the mind? which is not just about what you see on the slide, but what user is thinking in the mind, what background things you have done, like all those animation morphs, etc., versus what no one talks about is what audience is believing it. You might not be showing it, but they have certain perceptions. So magic interaction design is how do you understand that concept of what audience could think and start to predict that and show. So it's just like that prediction of effect that you create a magic with.
That is a fascinating conversation right there. Don't want to go down that rabbit hole, but oh my gosh,
This keeps coming back to the world of magic, but one of my favorite sort of aspects of magic is, and a lot of the methodology is making the audience think, connecting the dots in their head to make them think that they're seeing X when it's really not that at all. And that even transfers to after the fact. Every magician has had somebody come up to them and say, I saw you a year ago and you did this great trick where you made the sun vanish and you floated up and did all this stuff. And that's what they remember in their mind, even though that's absolutely not what you did. They make it more, the memory becomes greater than what actually happened, which is amazing. Because every magician knows you just say, thank you. Yes, I did do that. it's interesting because you're kind of, you know, if the prompt is imagine what, here's what I want to see, but then that sort of variance and everything and what it's producing is something that user now believes they are seeing, even though they're seeing something else. I don't know. I'm getting very
perception. It's the perception. Yeah. Okay. Perception.
There is also a term I've put in the chat: Barnum effect, Barnum effect, which talks about. I was reading these magical books, and it mentioned that you're ready to accept things as simple as horoscope, even though you believe they might be vague or might not be worth it. But just because you want to believe in them. So this Barnum effect was cool in terms of how your mind is want to be like tricked and go into that path of magical experience.
Is that after P.T. Barnum?
I don't know, but it was mentioned.
I bet it is.
I would imagine,
I mean, well, again, was a great salesman and they would sell one thing and give them something else. And people still believed they were seeing one
thing. Snake oil.
One more similar word or sentence that kept coming was there is one more than one thing that happen at a time when you're thinking about magic. Usually like talk tracks or presenters like, yeah, this is how the story would say, but you don't know there are 2-3 parallel like hidden iceberg things that are happening in parallel that people don't address. And that's what even like silent magic or silent comedy comes into play that Charlie Chaplin and others used to do. So
my favorite things. We got magic, we got Chaplin, we got Barnum. This is all my influences.
I love it.
So on that text thing, I was using, I forget what I was using, but I was trying to create an older computer with a keyboard, and it kept spitting out images of an old monitor, great, you know, desk, everything. But the keyboards, literally all the individual letters were all wavy and everything. And I just couldn't wrap my head around. I'm like, I'm not asking you to write words. I'm literally a keyboard, A, S, D. Like, what's the deal? Why is this so unbelievably difficult? I almost had to like Photoshop in actual letters on top of it.
There was another reasoning that I'd read somewhere in terms of the typography or text was usually these images are created at a low resolution and then they're upscaled. So when it's something like a very vague image, it's fine. But with text, as you start, you guys are experts. So if you have ever tried to upscale the text versus an image upscaling is easier, but text upscaling just makes it more weird. And that is one of the tricky things in AI, generative AI, that they're trying to solve too.
Interesting.
Excellent.
How much do you get into the real technical under the hood? Like you were just saying, it starts small, then it gets upscaled. I never even thought about that. It never even crossed my mind. How much are your hands in that at real technical?
I don't code daily on the model, but I test all the models. I would say, like on Copilot, you can even create music with Suno if you have not tried it. those musical AI. So I'm all top of whatever is the latest thing in the market with generative AI, I would go and read, and then my questions start coming. And that's where places like Reddit, Discord, if you're not on these Discords with generative AI folks, like join, just even if you're not creating, just searching of stories or some keyword, it makes my mind open. It's like, what are people creating with these? Mm-hmm. With this
keyword? How many hours do you have in your days? Because I think they're more than
other humans.
My team members are also asking the same question. I think it's passion. You get so excited. It's like, what if this? What if this? Like, there's another thing with the generative. It's like, what if, similar to magic, it's like, what if scenarios are there? And that's what my mind triggers on and connecting the dots. Can I tell one funny story I found during
this? Oh, please.
It's about story, but in general. So have you seen those floating tube man across?
Oh, the car dealerships.
Yeah, the car dealership.
Oh, even these guys.
Yeah.
The balloon guy, or not balloon, the air guys, yeah.
Yeah.
But have you ever researched of who created, how was it invented, like those floating tubes?
I feel like I've read an article, but I've forgotten.
So basically that started as a kickoff in 1996 Olympics, but that guy was also the same. He filed a patent. I started reading his patent recently. Is also the recreational balloons. Balloon, like where you fold the balloon and make like animal or something. Yep. He's the same guy. So I was looking at his TED talk. He was mentioning where it relates to stories is we talk about color, we talk about fonts, which is in that balloon, there are colors, there is shape, shape and color. But the third one that he played around and that became so popular is air. Digital air, so with the balloon, and that triggered my thought in terms of your storytelling of animations, like with magic AI, how you can play with digital air of moving or floating effects or something that people are not doing, but that could add so not direct correlation, but read about
air. You're creating air with animation.
Digital air. I love this. Digital air might be the catchphrase right there.
Exactly.
Creating digital air. Because I really like the MIT talk where you had the pixel analogy in the title. I was like, what is that? It captured my attention.
Sorry for my random
thought. No, it's wonderful. I think it's great.
Rolly Sate, Principal Product Manager for Microsoft Designer. Oh, thank you for some of your time today and for just this really fascinating conversation. The future of storytelling with PowerPoint is exciting for me and I hopefully everybody else listening. I'm not seeing presentation job creation being taken away in any way, but I do clearly see, especially from a conversation like this, it becoming more AI and Copilot integrated workflows. I'm excited for the future of presentation. I'm excited for kind of that ever evolving presentation project requests because now they're going to be evolving into this realm. And I'm just really, really excited hearing Rolly's passion for the future of storytelling. Thank you for joining us. Hey, folks, stick with us. We're going to do a few pro and tech tips here. And you know what mine is this week, guys, is we just updated. We have an internal document of Microsoft cloud fonts, Microsoft fonts, but the cloud based fonts. And it's a, you know, it shows each font in the font character set so we can visually see what they look like. And one of our designers went through and identified a number of fonts that we didn't even have listed in our own document. So I guess my tip is that, hey, Microsoft cloud font library, it continuously grows. And we found, hold on, I'm going to scroll over here. We added 15 fonts to our library, our internal document. And what the tip is go to aka.ms/office-fonts. There is a listing of all the fonts in there. Obviously, I'll put the link in the notes. And you know what? I said 15 fonts. That's really not true because Aptos, the whole family, font family is listed there. That is the new Office default font. Is that the Windows default font? I know it's the Office default font, but you know, default fonts started with Times New Roman forever. Then it became Calibri. So everybody will be familiar with this. Aptos is the new version, but it gets even more confusing because Bierstadt is another font that was introduced just 2021. Microsoft introduced 5 new fonts. Well, in 2023, just last year-ish, they renamed Bierstadt to Aptos. So it's really not a new font. It's just a new name for an existing font. And that font family is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, it's 6 fonts, if you will. There's Aptos Narrow, Aptos Mono, Aptos Serif, Display Black. Anyways, so there's my tip. I will give the URL. If you haven't used it, bookmark it. It takes you to all the Microsoft Cloud fonts, and they are safe to use everywhere. That's my pro and tech tip.
Excellent, Troy. I don't know what to call this Windows organization tool. I did mention it a while ago when I spoke about setting the layout of open programs on your monitor.
Yeah, I think the word that we would use after this conversation is it's magical.
It's magical, exactly. If you hover in any program, any window that you have open, if you hover over upper right-hand corner, that center square, right? Mm-hmm. We talked about how you get several layout options. So if I'm working in 2 PowerPoint presentations back and forth together, I can click the double option and I get those 2 side by side. The problem was if I left that scenario and opened Outlook, then I'd have to reset it up every single time. In a recent update, Microsoft has added groups. So groups are represented by a little icon. So right now I see a Edge Zencastr icon. So I'm going to click on that, and it allows me to choose what I want to have in the other window. That's my OneNote. Now, if I go to Outlook, I can come back by choosing the window icon that is the group, and it's already preset. So it's hard to explain. It really is, but it is such, I use it constantly. It's very, very helpful because I'm moving between screens all the time. Windows all the time.
Just for reference, this was an MS Power tool. I run their stuff all the time, and this is what it evolved from. They finally made it main state, which actually awesome. I didn't realize because I'm using the Power Tool version. But yeah, it's really cool. Mac has a similar version where you can kind of create preset layouts. Like I want this application over here, this application here, and this one down here, and you click it and it moves everything magically. Hey, there's that word. I didn't even need to do it into that position. I don't know what the name of that feature is, but it is really, really powerful if you're using single screen or multiple monitors. I know exactly what you're talking about. But they're called groups. Is that like literally what it's called?
Oh, gosh. I think that's a Sandy name.
I don't know. I'm going to have to look it up. Cool. I'm excited. I've been using
it. It is called group. Yep.
Okay. I've been using it.
This isn't Fancy Spaces, is it?
It's similar to that. Yes. Okay. It's an evolution of that.
I saw that term the other day, Windows Fancy Spaces.
That is what the Power Tools version is, and I wasn't going to list that name because I think it's fancy pants funny. Nolan, what do you got? Pro or tech tip?
All right. I'm going back to, scrolling back through my Amazon purchases, which is what I often do for tips. Troy, you prompted me to get some lighting behind me. Obviously, people can't see it. We don't do video, but I recently added these floor floodlights. These LED app-controlled floodlights just to light up the paint some color on the back of my wall in my office. And there are a whole bunch of them, a whole bunch of different people make them. We'll put a link in. The ones I got were from a company called Melpo off of Amazon, but they're ridiculously cheap. They're designed for outdoors, I think, but I just put them on the floor in my office. They're really great. So if you're looking to sort of, get a nice sort of color wash or, that sort of like purple Twitch streaming, style, whatever behind you, just get a bunch of these. They link together. You can do them separately or group them. There's a great app on them. So again, the ones I got were Melpo. I don't even know what that is.
They were under $100, weren't they? How many do you have?
I got a pack of 4 for like $50 or $60 or something, and they're great. I'm using 3 right now.
They're $69, and right now there is a $15 coupon that can be applied.
Okay, hold on, Nolan, smile.
That's
awesome. I am totally using that photo right there. I'm going to put this in there so everybody can see it. This is Nolan doing an awesome face. This came from his magic days.
Nolan, question about that. You can have warm white. It doesn't have to be colorful.
Yeah. You can do any color, like millions of colors and all that kind of stuff. So.
Lovely. Okay. Yeah,
really nice. All right, Rolly, what have you got for us? Got a good tip?
Yes, for me, it's for Copilot, Microsoft's website, copilot.microsoft.com, or Copilot app. Now start creating multimodal creations. So it's not just for text. One, you can do image creation. You can do start doing basic image editing. So things like you can do color pops. Like that's a quick feature. If you have not tried, you can go and do color pops. Expand it, change, resize some of the images. But also with multimodal music. If you have not tried on Copilot side, music creation, it's quite fun. I've been using it just for my personal consumer account. So yeah, it's free in terms of use your consumer account, be it mobile, be on website, but use it for multimodal creation too and enjoy.
She's also a composer. We didn't know that. And in her copious spare time, she's also making music. That's awesome. Great. I'm going to check it out.
Thanks, Rolly.
I feel like you have to be on it every day because something new every day is changing.
This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, professional presentation design studio. Check us out, tlccreative.com, a new website, I promise, coming soon, folks. I've been saying that for years, but it's really, really good. VXPmeeting.com, our virtual meeting platform for online meetings, attendee registration, all kinds of meeting planner, digital tools. The blog, thepowerpointblog.com, is where I get to have fun with PowerPoint presentation-related posts. And thanks for joining us.
And I'm Nolan from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, nolanhamescreative.com, where you can get a whole bunch of goodies and free stuff and learn all about my DataViz and presentation training if your organization is interested in that. Also, of course, thebetterdeckdeck.com, where you can get the digital version, the physical cards, the PowerPoint version, all sorts of different versions on that. And you can use the coupon code podcast to get 20% off any order.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz. You can visit my website and blog at presentationwiz.biz. I'm also on LinkedIn as Sandra Johnson, PowerPoint MVP, and on X as PPT Wiz. I couldn't remember for just a second. I very rarely on there, but you can find me on X. Also, don't forget to visit the Presentation Guild at presentationguild.org.
And this is Rolly Sett from Microsoft Designer, who is working in the visual AI creation space. If you want to follow me, there is LinkedIn, but also have a YouTube channel, which is called Always Be Curious, ABC. So always about new and curious things, and hope you enjoyed this magical podcast.
Wonderful.
I didn't know you had a YouTube channel.
No.
But again, in your copious spare time. Really? I don't know how you do it.
Episode show notes are available at the Presentation Podcast website, thepresentationpodcast.com. This podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc., and new episodes release on the first and third Tuesday of each month.